Hello, and welcome to the 12th Millennial 2016 Hangout. Let me just make sure of that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 11. Yeah, this is the 12th. So this one is with Davis MJ Orini.
Hey, brother, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. I'll just introduce you briefly, because this is the first time that Orini and I have done anything together on my channel. I think we once were in a hangout together on someone else's channel, briefly. But this is the first time we've done it on my channel.
I think we had one on my channel, but it was like 2 or 3 years ago.
Well,
it's really hard to schedule the time zones.
Oh, yeah, I know. I mean, I started my channel 3 years ago, and it was inspired by Irini's channel. So I think it's right that he appears on mine. I think it's quite nice. So, I liked the format of his videos and his general style of how you'd approach a subject. So you inspired me to do mine. So thank you.
Well, and you've been kicking ass. You've even pissed off your entire government.
Well, I don't know about that, but I have gained some local notoriety. Which is not, I mean, it's not something I tried to do. It's just happened. We'll see what happens there.
It's an unfortunate side effect of this. Like, you kind of have to be famous to do what we do. And I don't know, maybe some people want to be famous, but there's really, in my opinion, way more costs to being famous than there are benefits.
Definitely. I mean, I've even noticed this within the sphere of the alt-right. When I had like 1,000 people subscribe to me, there was far less pressure. There was far less of a sense of pressure and far fewer people attacking you and criticizing the choices you make and all that. But now, as a channel grows, and now I've got 19,000, and it feels like a far bigger responsibility. I'm realistic about this, I know that as YouTube channels go, that's still very small. But as you gain fame, even as a minor e-celebrity, it is a different thing. And as for fame in the real world,
you wind up with a target on your head.
Well, possibly. I don't know. I don't want to be too fatalistic about it, but it is rather unnerving. I certainly never expected it to happen to me.
Heck, I just started YouTubing just to practice public speaking.
Yeah, I remember you said that. It was kind of accidental for you.
Yeah, and I prefer the written word because you can I think, like, I do a good job, and you do a good job as well, exploring complex philosophical ideas on YouTube. But unfortunately, the medium is much more, it leans more towards rhetoric than dialectic.
Yeah, it's for sure. What I like about it is that it's spontaneous and kind of tactile. I like that it's... it feels organic and natural, and it feels like communication, in the proper sense of the word. Whereas written is, I mean, I used to do a lot of writing. I used to do a huge amount of writing, and when I started the channel, it was really because I was sick of writing. It was because I wanted something else, and I still like it. I still like it very much, and there's absolutely a place for writing, even in the. If you're not talking about books, at the other extreme, if you're talking about, tweet style stuff, that I think there is a necessity for that even. But I love talking and going through something. I mean, you must feel this yourself. I mean, there are several videos. I was watching some of your old videos recently. You must have this sense sometimes that it's the real-time nature of speaking to a camera, an uninterrupted monologue, where you're not interrupted by other people, that is, where it's just you and you're able to think through a subject at your own pace, sort of leisurely. I certainly don't get that with the written word.
Well, and there certainly is something to be said for being able to sit there and explain an idea. Like when I started doing this, it was the era of jump cuts, which were just cheating as far as I was concerned. I despise jump cuts. And even right now, like lately, I haven't been able to do videos with a video component, just because my whole living situation's just been unstable right now. That's why I'm talking to you right now, while I'm parked in the gas station with Space Dog as my co-pilot. So trying to get the video component has, I haven't been able to do that, but I'm planning to get back to that soon. And it's, I like the challenge of it, but also the, like, you do have that genuine nature. I mean, one of the things I love is how all of my detractors think I'm putting on airs, because they've never met a real human being who wasn't a complete weirdo who was capable. You know, it's like, it really says more about them than it says about me. Or you, that they think that we must be putting on airs whenever we're doing it. No, this is actually how, if there was no camera playing, we would be sitting in the dark smoking and talking about philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Like, I mean, for example,
the difference between our videos and us in real life is that we spend 20 minutes or an hour organizing our thoughts before making the video, to make sure it's a really good video. That's the only difference.
Yeah. I mean, I get it about the dressing gown. That became a thing, but that was simply because it didn't even occur to me to not wear, because I was just always wearing the dressing gown indoors. So it never even occurred to me. I think it was in the middle of winter. So I just thought, well, I'll just do it as I am, you know? And, but then that became a thing, which is kind of absurd, really. But then people say that, your voice, like, you can't really speak like that in real life, because, well, I do. It's not an affectation. It's not putting on airs. But, you know, I mean, this is the kind of trivial stuff. Whatever you do on YouTube, somebody doesn't like it. Somebody knows that they would have done it better, and somebody has a go at you.
Oh, and that's just, it's kind of a sad statement. I don't know if it's our generation or if it's the medium, because, you know what, I've caught myself being a prick before on the internet, being really critical of things. And that's something I try and curb in myself. You know, like, I try, if I'm going to criticize, I try and offer constructive criticism. Unless it's an idiot like Shoe on Head. Constructive criticism is get off the internet, get pregnant, and stop sleeping with Arab guys. It's something about the medium. Well, it leads to narcissism in a sense. It leads to everybody thinking that their opinion is unwarranted self-importance, you know?
That is a danger. So I mean, I think for me, the thing that keeps that danger at bay, or what I think is keeping that danger at bay, is the fact that I really feel like we have a mission, and I certainly feel I have a mission. And nothing is more important than that. So, but yeah, I guess a psychologist would say that's obscene self-aggrandizement and, you know, grandiosity.
Well, no, I don't think so, because it's actually very humbling. Because, yeah, you just nailed it. Because I'm talking about this, and I worry that I'm walking into the trap of hypocrisy with this, because, yeah, that's what I do, is I have opinions on the internet. But there is more at play. Like what it boils down to, and I'm not going to go through the whole list, but just like when you let the scales drop from your eyes and you look at the world, okay, look at the birth rate in European countries. Look at the growing national debt in every country. Look at, you know, the corporate takeover of government, and the government takeover of corporations, the collusion between the two of them. Look at the anti-human ideology being spread by the United Nations, and so on and so on. And actually, you know, not more than just that. I was visiting a couple of friends, and it was in this small town outside of a major city. And it was this big, not a mall complex, because it was all outdoors, right? But it was enormous. It was like the size of a housing subdivision. Must have been 100 or 200 stores there. And it was all really nice. It was kind of a little rich area, bedroom community outside of the big city. And there was a security guard patrolling in a vehicle. And I was looking at this, and I said to my buddy, do you remember these things when we were kids? Do you remember security guards patrolling in vehicles at an outdoor place? We did not have that, but that's become the new normal. You know, things are on the decline, and I guess that's what we're all trying to do, is bounce ideas off one another.
Figure for sure.
Figure out how to survive.
Yeah, definitely. Things like that. I'm trying to think of other examples, but they are everywhere. You see it every day. And it used to be something that I kind of lamented. And this is what distinguishes paleocons from, well, the likes of us. The paleocon is lamenting that things have changed. And where I think a more sensible attitude is to just accept, yes, they really have changed. And it's a fucking bummer. I would love it to be like we were in, the 1900s or the 1890s. That would be just fucking marvelous. But unfortunately, things have changed. Everything's changed. Education has gone downhill. Diction's gone downhill. Culture's gone downhill. Morality's gone downhill. Genetics have gone downhill. Everything has gone downhill. And you've just got to accept it. And that does not mean surrendering to it and not doing anything. But you can't lament that things have changed. You have to, the more constructive attitude is to just try to make them change in a new direction. Yeah, there's no going back, basically.
And it's, I think the paleocons, I'm not sure if we really disagree with them at all, aside from the fact that I don't think they have any idea just how bad it is.
Yes, exactly. It's almost like they think if only we could turn the clock back, everything would be okay. But I don't think they quite grasp that, no, things have gone so far that you cannot possibly turn the clock back at this stage. I mean, for Christ's sake, we're talking about at least 50 years that you would want to turn the clock back. And then there are the more practical difficulties. How are you going to tell people to accept hierarchy in a society where, from day to day, there is no need for hierarchy at all? And how are you going to introduce hierarchy to people just out of the blue? You can't do that. It's been demolished. You can't just assert it. There has to be some reason for them to accept it. And there are many other examples of that. One of them would be male and female. You're not going to persuade the modern woman, certainly not en masse, to give up career and just have children. You can't. Horse is bolted.
Even though I think Vox Day posted this the other day. The list of careers with the highest job satisfaction for women, number one is housewife, and like number two is like, it's like volunteer at a church. Number three is hospitality industry. It's, even though the jobs are making them absolutely miserable, it's not just women that are miserable. This is another conversation I was having with a friend about television. People don't go out and talk to one another anymore. They're not really going to bars. They're not going to coffee shops to meet other people. And heck, let me tell you this story. So I was at the bar a while back, and first I started talking to this guy that was visiting town. And then we started talking to a couple of girls, and they were cute. They were well-dressed, professional, and their body language, I could have sworn that it was screaming that they were just completely not interested in me. They wanted me to go away. They're disgusted by me, whatever. And yet they sat there and talked to us for 3 hours, buying their own drinks, mind you. Okay. Like, we weren't buying them drinks. And it was, what I realized is that the way that porn is desensitizing guys and turning them into Aspies, girls are getting, I don't know what it was with these two. I don't know if it was Facebook or Instagram or just celebrity worship or whatever, but they had been completely desensitized to real human interaction. People are miserable, and instead of doing anything about it, they keep going to their job that makes them miserable. Then they come home and they hide in their houses, and they watch TV or they play mindless video games. Like, and hey, wait, listen, everything in moderation. Okay. I'm not saying turn off the TV, throw out the video games, but that's all these people do. Everybody's miserable. There's a heroin epidemic right now, a pain pill epidemic. There's an SSRI epidemic. And honestly, there's going to be some kind of culling. Okay, and this is not the two neo-Nazis threatening to... No, no, it's not going to be us. It's going to be evolution. It's going to be natural forces. You know, how many of these women have driven themselves infertile with birth control? How many of them are no longer able to bond? And, you know, maybe they'll have, like, one child with some guy they meet off of FetLife, you know, when they're 33. And that child will be, because he's 33, he'll have autism, and then he'll be abused by the single mom, and then he's never going to have children. You know, etc. Like, what part of the, what percentage of the population is actually recoverable?
God knows. it is pretty bad. The situation is bad. I mean, I've said before, my own social circle, or the one that I would have become a part of, would have definitely become a part of had my life gone differently. That social circle, I'm sort of semi-attached to it through mutual friends. That social circle is sterile. The women have had abortions. The men are very feminine, totally rudderless, and they're all nihilistic. And they live like, you know, they're in their mid-30s and they live like they're 18. And yet they're not happy either. Because of course they're not fucking... How could they be happy?
Like, you know, it's not how we're meant to live.
No, it's not how you're meant to live. So that is always going to disagree with your innate nature. So you're not going to be happy. And it's amazing how the culture has just guides them into this terrible position. I mean, just to tell young women that they should put career before babies, before mothering, is setting them up. That in itself is setting them up for terrible, well, a terrible life, a lot of them.
Well, and same thing with guys. What's the goal for young men? You know, to get laid as much as you can. And it doesn't make them happy. You know, not like, I mean, what, 2/3 of the guys can't get laid to save their life, right? Because it's, we're going to this extreme hypergamous, you know, the top 20% get the top 80% of women. You know, but even those top 20% that are getting the women, you know, it's like, to what end? You know, you wind up being in bed with a whole bunch of people that you don't even know, you don't even like, and you don't even have conversations with them anymore. That's what's really just beyond anything else killed it for me, is that you don't even have conversations. It's like it's a physical need that gets taken care of by Tinder with as little with as little emotional interaction as possible between the two parties.
Well, yeah, I'm not part of that. I don't have a smartphone. I'm quite so I managed to evade this or avoid this stuff, and that's not deliberate. It's sort of just a happy accident. But I hear about it from other people and what, you know, what Tinder is like, that sort of thing. And it was the same with video games. Yeah, I avoided video games simply because I just, you know, I reached an age, and back then this was far more common, you know, in the early 90s. When you reached 12, 13, you just sort of stopped playing the NES and the Game Gear and the Mega Drive, the Genesis. Nowadays, and I didn't realize this until very recently, that video games are now played by people into their late teens and throughout their 20s and throughout their 30s. You know, so that's a terrible purgatory for a young man to be in.
Well, because again, there's something missing from the whole thing. Yeah, I just had to do a whole bunch of work in my car. And, you know, each time, there's actually an emotional arc to when you're doing something stupid to your car that you'd really wish that you had the money to pay somebody else to do. Where, you know, you start off and you have a plan, and then halfway through it starts getting really, really terrible and painful because, of course, you're bleeding all over the place. And then you hit the emotional low where you start thinking, oh, God, am I ever going to be able to reassemble this? Do I even know what I'm doing? And you actually get depressed, you know, like you want to cry a little bit because it's like, oh, it's so much work to do. But then you get it assembled again and your car, it turns on, it kicks over, it's running, and you just have this catharsis to the whole thing. Whereas video games, they give you sort of the challenge, but it's not the real challenge. The same way Facebook gives you attention, but it's not real human attention. It's a cheap high fructose corn syrup substitute. And that's what we're consuming these days.
Yeah, there was somebody I saw a few months ago, somebody talking about that. It might have been one of your videos. I don't know what it was. Someone was saying that there's a fake version and a real version of everything, and modern society gives you many ways, easy ways to have the fake version of something, but the real version is much harder. Society, if anything, at best, it doesn't give you ways to do it, and at worst, it actually actively discourages you from pursuing that real thing. A good example of this would be porn. I mean, you cannot overstate how abundant porn is in 2016. And yet we increasingly don't know how to have relationships, and certainly not long-term relationships.
Well, porn is so... You know, this is something I like to talk about with the problem of the video camera. Okay, because the video camera does not depict reality. Okay, the camera itself does not depict reality. A painting is going to give you a more accurate depiction of reality than a camera ever will, because the camera is edited. It is the dream world, and porn is really the perfect example to help explain why watching a Marvel movie is bad for you. Now, think about that porn set. Think about, you know, like all five people there, and, you know, and you've got that. Now, expand your vision past the edges of the screen. You know, look around, and suddenly this isn't a house, it's a set, okay? And you've got guys with video cameras, smoking cigars, you've got hot lights, you've got all of this here. Now, expand it in time. You know, like the porn video is this really hot and sexy scene that, you know, we all want to be a part of that. Now expand before that. Go back to the actors and actresses. Good Lord. When did we start? I don't know if that, anyway, actors and actresses. Look at them signing the consent forms. Look at them saying, okay, will you do double anal? Will you do this, that, the other thing? You know, look at the mandatory STD screening. Look at the homes they go back to. It's like, this is not real. Okay? You know, this is not a friendly game of strip poker in high school. All right? This is completely different. This thing on the screen is a completely artificial construct. It is not reality at all. And yet it's more powerful than reality. It impacts us more powerfully than the real world does. And when the real world doesn't match up with that, we wind up being very, not just disappointed with the real world, but we disconnect from the real world and then go back into that imaginary film world. And the exact same thing goes for movies. Movies are just as bad. It's just that they're not as... Porn is the most obvious.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is... I mean, what do you would you say that this is sort of inevitable thing when you're in a post-industrial society? There is just a complete detachment from necessities of life. I mean, I remember one video you did early on, because I'm a particular fan of your early videos. I like your early work. there was one of your early videos where you said, in a small village, when you're living in a small village, every woman is sexy. And, well... Obviously, the incredible opposite now, where you live in a huge city and you feel like you've got the not just the choice of the women in that city, but even in the over the entire Western Hemisphere. And so your perceptions alter in there. And then, well, no woman is as sexy as that girl in the village would have been 100 years ago. Because the abundance distorts your perceptions.
You know what? I'm going to go way out there and argue, because you said post-industrial. And you're right. Like, all of this, like, the problems really started. That's when the mushroom appeared. Okay? And now it's just spraying its spores everywhere. The Industrial Revolution is when things started to really get terrible. But you know what? I don't think we needed an Industrial Revolution. Honestly. I think that the way the Industrial Revolution happened, it wasn't the technology that caused it. It was the death of God. This is something like I've mentioned a couple of times. I'm working on a book. It is progressing. I've had to things have been very unstable the past couple of weeks, and I haven't gotten anything done on it. But around 1650, with the writing of Leviathan, Thomas Hobbes flipped the divine right of kings on its head. The divine right of kings that we used to have was that the king, the monarch, was chosen by God, but that means he is accountable to God. Right? So, yeah, he's the one in charge, but he's still accountable to somebody. Okay, to the highest, to virtue, to truth, to beauty. With Hobbes and Leviathan, he flipped it on its head. He essentially said there is nothing in this world but physical force and violence. And if we don't have a king that uses physical force and violence, then we will all use it. So the king needs to have ultimate authority. So God needs to work for the king. And since then, everything has been nothing but manipulation. Everything has a price. Nothing has a value. And so the Industrial Revolution, I don't think it's the technology that really went so wrong there. It's that nobody was asking, is this the right thing to do with it? Is this how we should be organizing our society? It was just like, oh, we can do this, and I can pay workers this little, and I can force them to work 18 hours a day. Let's do it. And it's just been downhill since then.
Yeah, we're in a position. I mean, when you think about the 1950s, I know that there were ruthless employers and so on, but the situation was such that you could just get another job anyway. The way things are now, and this is maybe exacerbated by the financial crisis from 2008, but the way things are now, there just seems to be so... You're almost your employer's whore now. I mean, in sort of mainstream, especially in the corporate workplace. I mean, I know people who have corporate jobs and they're just slaves. And there's a sort of... And this, I think this relates to the breakdown of, social trust, not even social cohesion, because I think this is the case even in largely monoracial societies now. But we just seem to have this idea that society is, extremely capitalistic, extremely ruthless, mercenary, which I think it can only relate to a breakdown of social trust. I mean, I don't think we have this sense anymore that you not only fill a position in your society, but you actually fulfill a role in your society. That seems to be just gone by the wayside now. What would you say about that?
Exactly. I mean, why would there be social trust? Like, what is social? We have no definition of that whatsoever. Okay, society is the McDonald's hamburger. Society is your 401k. Society is the HR. This is what you're allowed to speak about in the office because it's inoffensive. You know, society is the bottom line. It's the buck. It's the, let's put some corn syrup in this because it makes it more addictive. So society is, take this drug to numb you so that you don't cause any trouble at your workplace. There's no social trust because there's no society anymore. This is the one thing that drives me nuts about the the scienticians, I effing love science people, we can just reason our way out of this. They have all these things they can measure, right? They can measure GDP. They can measure the grade 12 achievement on your final exam. They take all these things they can measure. And because they can measure them, they assume that's all there is to reality. Let me give you an organic example of this. So one of the things I was working on with my car was the brakes. Okay, I needed to replace one of the fluid lines for the system to make the brakes actually work. And so the brakes were operating at a very low capacity. Now, because I'm a human, and because I am more than just a warm computer, a moist computer, okay? I actually create a version of reality in my own head that corresponds to actual reality in many ways, but it's far more refined. And so just all of these little bits of data, these little bits of information here and there, when I'm driving my car, I will notice that, oh, this system is not performing 100%. I'd better look into that and fix it. And in the meantime, I'm going to, you know, with the brakes, I'm going to have more of a following distance on the highway. A computer, there is no sensor to detect if that's a problem. And so if this was a self-driving car, a brilliant self-driving car communicates with everything else, and it would not know about those brakes, and it would get into a car accident because of that. You know, of course, and then the scientist will say, well, okay, we'll just put a sensor on that. There are never going to be enough sensors. What you've created is just a system of levers that respond. It does not generate new information. It does not create hypotheses. It does not... That's the ironic thing. Actual science can only be done by human beings, but these scientician types want everything to be robots.
Yeah, automated and streamlined.
And it's turning us into robots. Okay, the whole system, the bureaucracy, there's a problem, we'll just create a system. And this is going to be laws, not levers or computer circuits, but it's the same damn thing. We're going to create this system that will fix everything. And then something completely it's not unexpected. People like us have been predicting these problems for centuries now, just that nobody listens to us. That problem happens. So then they add a new layer and a new layer and a new layer. And soon you have this absolute behemoth. Nobody is responsible for anything. Common sense has completely gone out the window. And it's just the system, man. You can't fight the system. This is the world that, this is the matrix that we're building for ourselves. Okay. The matrix, Neo, that was an optimistic view of the future. The robots, they might have been assholes, but at least they were fucking people.
I mean,
we're slaves to things that don't even have emotions or self-awareness.
Well, I mean, do you think this rests on comfort? I mean, it seems to me that, or abundance rather, luxury, because I don't think it can go on. I mean, the raw materials for this are going to run out, or rather the systems that bring them to us are going to break down, surely.
Are you referring to the RK theory of anonymous conservative?
Well, that might play into it. I'm thinking more about simple social decline. Eventually, the systems that make us complacent and soft and, you know, flaccid are going to be brought down by our being complacent and soft and flaccid.
Oh, yeah. It cannot continue the way it is going. And mind you, the problem with saying that is that, you know, they've been predicting an economic collapse for a year. I've been predicting one for years now. When's it going to happen? I don't know.
Well, again, I remember in one of your early videos, in fact, I think it's actually titled 2018 something something. Can't remember the full title, but you did specify the year 2018.
Oh, that one I'm pretty sure of. 2018 is not going to be a nice year, folks. And I think we're already seeing the pieces on the chessboard move into attack formation. If I can, you know, mix metaphors there.
it's quite good.
Look what happened with Gamergate. Okay. 5 years ago, it was like MRAs and game or whatever we were just this loose affiliation called the Manosphere versus, I don't know, feminists or something. And we didn't much like socialists either, but it was very nebulous back then. Whereas now, especially with Trump, it started with Gamergate. The two sides began to segregate off. But now with Trump, it's really crystallized into two sides of this whole thing. You know, you've got the SJWs who are increasingly irrational. They're increasingly narcissistic. They're increasingly in denial of reality. And you've got us that are increasingly awake. You know, like the guys I was meeting with, I know them through the Roosh V forum. All right. And I think we talked about picking up women for like all of 5 minutes. The other 3 hours were the typical stuff that we talk about on our channels. You know, we just wanted to pick up chicks, and now we're talking about, okay, well, I need to move my family out of this town, and this is going down, and there's going to be a nuclear war, all this stuff.
Well, yeah, it certainly has got a lot more serious, and that's something that's quite interesting. I mean, that's the root of my frustration, or one of my frustrations with the libertarian crowd and the Manosphere crowd, is that I don't think they quite realize or grasp or care to grasp how deep and broad the malaise is. It's not just feminism. It's not just the SJWs. It's not just women being spoiled. It's not even just the thinning of Christianity. It's something much more profound than that that's going on. It's not even just mass immigration. I mean, you could moan about that, but multiculturalism is a result of mass immigration. Mass immigration is a symptom of something else. And again, it's not. I don't think it's even just economic processes that lead to that, or villainous globalists, although they certainly are there. But even they, why are they there? Why are we tolerating them? Why do the good men tolerate them among the higher echelons? You know, it's... I mean, some people will blame the Jews, and I think, yeah, I don't want to get into that, but I'll just say that I acknowledge that. But I think even then, why are they being tolerated? Why are they allowed to do their damage? Because they certainly are there, and you know, at every level of our society, and doing that along with other Gentiles. But the point is, why are they being allowed to do that?
Goyim buys, right?
Sorry?
The merchant sells and the goyim buys.
Precisely.
I mean, like seriously, like folks, I know I said I wasn't going to say turn off the TV, but turn off the damn TV. You know, it's that simple. If they're spreading cultural filth at you from the television, turn the damn thing off. Don't give them money. Don't pay to go see Star Wars. Do not contribute to it. Stop buying pornography and the pornographers will go out of business. You know, stop paying for methamphetamine and the meth dealers go out of business.
Oh, exactly. But see, what I was getting at is I think that this is just something in the Western, the white soul. I think that we are in a process that has to be lived out. It has to be suffered. It's like a purgatory.
You know, Anonymous Conservative has admitted that his RK theory fails to include the spiritual dimension, and that is very much a part of it as well. Because, let's put it this way, RK theory would predict that because we are resource rich, let's say some punk, I don't know, steals a candy bar from me or something, right? You know what? I'm not going to chase him down and put a bullet in the back of his head for stealing a candy bar. In fact, I'm probably not even going to phone the police about that because I don't want to, well, especially nowadays, I don't hate the cops, but I feel better when they're not around. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to cut my losses because we're still in a resource-rich environment. Okay, that's sort of the K's are not as aggressive as they would otherwise be, because, the criminals are moving into the neighborhood, we'll just move to another town, as opposed to organizing a posse and burning down their houses. That's RK. The SJWs, though, and yes, the SJWs are part of RK. They're exactly what you expect from RK, and yet there's more to it than that. There really is this level of insanity to them. You know, you cannot discuss anything with them, right? We were talking earlier about the people that snipe and leave the stupid comments in our videos.
Yeah.
These people are incapable of dialogue, okay? I have not, like, they will not discuss things. They will just make snide little insults and then they'll run off. You know, do you remember when you used to have those creationists that would debate evolutionists? And then the creationist would get proven wrong on something, and then they'd go and argue it again somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's what these people are. Okay. And there is a real edge of like a spiritual sickness, a hatred of good, of beauty, of truth, and a love of evil.
Yes. I mean, a hatred of hierarchy, which I think as soon as you don't respect hierarchy, that's very difficult. That's very problematic because you're going to then despise any social systems, basically, because virtually every social system ensures hierarchy. If you can't handle hierarchy, you're going to be against virtually every social system and structure that you happen to be enmeshed in.
If you hate hierarchy, you ultimately hate truth.
Yes.
If there's nobody, your truth needs to be just as important and just as true as everybody else's.
Mm. Indeed. Indeed. And also, just the nature of reality is hierarchical. I mean, if you can't handle that, you're screwed.
Well, and this is why you've seen so many bits of the Manosphere have bled off. You know, like the MGTOWs, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, Men Going Their Own Way was originally just this really harsh examination of what are men and women, how should society be, what are the risks to getting married, etc., etc. And the conclusion, and it was mostly older guys doing this, okay, it was guys that were like 35, 40, and saying, you know what, I've been through the ringer enough times, I'm just, quite frankly, I'm doing my thing from now on. Maybe a woman will be a part of that, but I'm no longer premising my entire life on getting a woman. These days, however, it's bled off because it's become nothing but, not nothing but there's a substantial number of bitter clingers, okay, like just bitter guys that can't meet women and just want to sit around and be bitter about it. You know, they say they're going their own way, but all they do is obsess over women and they're not getting laid.
Well, that's an interesting thing about that part. Would you say that's MGTOWs?
That's largely what it's become now.
Mm.
And see, with the original MGTOWs have actually abandoned the label. Like Rob Fetters has stripped the word MGTOW, the acronym, I guess it is an acronym, from his website because he wants nothing to do with the current crop.
Yes.
The original Manosphere, like a huge part of it was about picking up chicks. But eventually we start saying, wait, is this really what we should be doing with our lives? Is this really a virtuous way of living? Is this a good way of living? And we said, you know what? Maybe we were wrong about some of those things. Like we were right about, yeah, this is how you get your dick wet. But this isn't the right way to live your life.
That is a sort of process. Yeah, it's like a process of growth. I think it's like any young man. You know, when you're an adolescent, you think the best thing in the world would be to have sex, and then you eventually have that experience, and you have it again and again, and then you realize actually it's a bit empty. It's not as fulfilling as you thought it was going to be when you were 14. You know.
Well, it's, you know what, like look at dogs. Okay. You know, see, the thing with dogs is that a male dog can lick its own balls. So a male dog goes up to a bitch and he sniffs her butt twice and she assumes the position for him. Now, that's because if she didn't, he'd just go lick his own balls. Whereas we can't lick our own balls, so women give us tons of shit before we even get close, before we even get a peck on the cheek.
hold on a second. I'll just see if you have questions for Irini, put them in the 2016 Millennial Hangouts video along with the other questions, and begin them with for Irini or for Davis. That way I can find them all easily. I can't keep up with the live chat. I'm sorry. It's just too difficult. I wanted to ask you about the alt-right and your views on that, because something that is, it's a question that I have. Do you consider yourself alt-right? And it's okay if you don't. I'm not going to, bitch at you about it.
Oh yeah, I generally say I would consider myself alt-right. I mean, I've been part of the alt-right a lot longer than most of the people in it. Was I guess should I touch on like the whole, you know, two Jews and a Korean making the Nazi salute at NPI? I thought that was ridiculous, embarrassing. I did write an article calling out Spencer for that. It's like saying, like, why do you even have the mainstream media there? We don't need these people. Okay, these people are, screw them. They are not going to do anything good for us. They're just going to try and make us look bad. And that the whole Nazi salute did make the rounds. I even heard it from some normies. That said, though, you know what? It really was a small thing. He addressed it and he said, okay, yeah, that was bad PR. That was a whatever bad maneuver. And hey, that's it's dealt with. You know, I still like the work Spencer does. I don't think it's really damaged the, like, they've been calling us Nazis anyway.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, it hasn't really changed. It's given them the evidence they needed to show to the public that, hey, it's a neo-Nazi movement. Although it was only a tiny, tiny number of people at that conference. But nonetheless, it's given them the evidence they needed to justify their hysteria about the alt-right. But the thing is, their hysteria was there in the first place.
I think people are waking up to the fact that the media is lying about absolutely everything. Like, I think only like 30% of Americans actually strongly believe that Russia had anything to do with the hacking attempts on the DNC.
Yes, this is a good example. This is something I was going to ask you about because you've spoken about the mainstream media for a long time in your videos as something that we are, certainly we in, let's say on the fringes of society, the fringes of the internet, we have been skeptical about the mainstream media probably all our adult lives, maybe in our teenage years as well. I mean, it's worth saying that Irini and I are older than a lot of our subscribers. You know, I didn't have 4chan when I was a teenager. You know, we are of a slightly different generation.
I actually used to read the newspapers for pleasure, believe it or not.
I used to watch VHS videos back in the 90s. But I mean, I'd love to go into a nostalgia thing, but that will get me off course. What was I saying? See, I've already gone off course. Oh yeah, so we are of a slightly different generation, and we have been skeptical of the mainstream media for a very long time. And so for someone like me, 2016 has been just incredible because, you know, let's say when you're six, when you know, when you and I were 16, we might have rebellious, and forgive me if I'm projecting here, Irini, you can tell me if I'm wrong. When I was 16, I went through the typical thing, rebellious. And you think, oh, the mainstream is a load of rubbish, and don't trust what you see on the TV. And then you outgrow that. And in your early 20s, mid-20s, you think, oh, what a tit I was when I was a teenager. It's not that bad, really. But then 2016 happens, and you realize, holy shit, I was right. I mean, that instinct as a, you know, a rebellious, twatty teenager, that instinct was dead on. I mean, they're lying about everything.
Yeah, it's listen, we were all, anybody that says they weren't rebellious is just still rebellious and they don't even know it, quite frankly. Okay, and they're, you know, yeah, my dad once quoted to me an old song, and I have no idea who the heck wrote this song, but the lyrics went, "You have to get in to get out." You know, before you can break out of the system, you need to get in to the system in the first place. And one thing that always frustrated me was, because I joined the military at a young age. People that were too smart to join the military, you know, people that were wiser than the politicians, than the generals, than all of that, those people really, really frustrated me. Because, you know, at the time, I had numerous critiques, okay? I was one of the few people in my family that knew that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. Say the whole Iraq war, like that actually really worried me when America started that. And it was asinine. They never should have. But here's the thing. At the same time, you know, if I'm my perspective, and I just have a character that's naturally attracted to the military, but my view was that, you know what, at the end of the day, I'm 22 years old, you know?
Yeah.
And if I want to ever be the sort of person to have any claim on authority, then right now, I need to put my money where my mouth is. You know, so you need to get into the system before you can get out of the system. Because anybody can sit on the sidelines and be an armchair quarterback, be a critic. Anybody can do that. But you need to put, you, if you're actually going to make a positive critique on things, you need to be involved in the system. Like anybody can complain about a movie. It's another thing to be a film critic where you discuss the movie. You know, you don't necessarily have to make a movie to do that, but you do have to educate yourself about the art of filmmaking, as opposed to just being some holier-than-thou prick that works at the box factory and smokes pot every night.
Yeah. Well, what were we saying? Oh, yeah, we're talking about the mainstream media and how it's as I've said in other Hangouts, I think it's disgraced itself this year. And so, okay, you've got, there are so many examples of this, but I suppose the first one is that comes to mind is that Russia, they say they're trying to engineer some kind of war with Russia. They were doing this when Hillary was, when they thought that Hillary was going to become president. And then they said that Russia was had hacked the emails and had also been involved in the somehow rigging the election. I mean, that kind of thing is just amazing. And then Pizzagate. What would you say about Pizzagate?
You know what? There are too many coincidences there. Way too many. There's the... Oh, what is his name? There's a blogger. It's Double Face or Face Off. Or he's got... Oh, my goodness. I know Common Filth reads him, too. I'm so sorry. I can't remember his name. But he decided to do a simple email search, a Google image search for, what was it, childhood rescue agencies?
Right.
And the number of images he found with the pedophile symbol in them.
Fucking hell.
Like listen, there's a Shriners commercial that I've been seeing recently where they've got a heart and they've got, like a Shriner standing next to a kid inside the heart. And like, I'm really cynical, but I think that one's innocent. Okay. I sure as heck hope it's innocent because it's for kids that have lost a limb and whatnot. It's really sad. The ones he was finding though are, you know, the hand inside the hand in so many of them, the actual spiral inside of it, all of these different agencies. And these are, like, I've been aware of these FBI symbols for several years. I think I saw them on 4chan the first time, like, 4 or 5 years ago. And I never really looked into it that much. But Pizzagate is just the tip of the iceberg, I think. You know, that really got people's attention. And now that you're seeing these symbols everywhere. Now, at the same time, I don't know if anybody there is actually guilty of anything aside from bad taste. All right? Like, these are the sort of urban elites that would think it was a hilarious joke to make a child-friendly restaurant with a pedophile symbol just LOL. Okay? Like, a few years ago, there was some group decided to make an inflatable Christmas tree shaped like a butt plug. All right, because they are being subversive. That.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can see what you, the kind of thing you're talking about. Yeah.
But then you start talking about John Podesta's paintings.
Mm.
Those are paintings of child abuse. There is no two ways about that. These are not shocking photos. It's not like like the Virgin Killer album, which if you live in Britain, don't look that up. The police will get you. Or what's the Nirvana one with the naked baby swimming in the pool, you know? Like, it's not art, okay? It's not nudity. That is... honestly, I would find naked children less disturbing than those paintings that he has. Those paintings are child abuse.
Now, yeah, and then... Sorry, start again.
Oh, I always said, does he actually abuse children? Who knows? But he has paintings of vicious child abuse. Brutal, painful, sadistic, emotionally abusive. Like, we're not talking about some perverts looking at lolly porn, you know, looking at cartoon images from Japan of underage girls, okay? You know, like, that's bad enough. That's really warping your sexuality. But no, this is... This is beyond the pale. You see what I'm saying here?
Absolutely. And this is what's so interesting about it. And it's not just pedophilia. It's sick, torturous pedophilia. And it involves cruelty, you know, like for its own sake. And this is what I think is just, you know, it would be, obviously it would be bad enough if it was just standard pedophilia.
It's also worth mentioning the connections to the alleged MK Ultra Monarch program. Many of the paintings inside of the restaurant of the pizza, what's it called, ping pong, whatever. Many of those paintings, Comet Ping Pong. Many of the paintings have the child, like they're very, they're just kind of like stick figures, right? But they have the child in a position that suggests sexual abuse, that could be interpreted as sexual abuse. And then they have a shadowy version of the child floating above their body or to the left of their body, dissociating, which is an effect of abuse. Now, if you're the MK Ultra Monarch program, allegedly, was a brainwashing system where you subject the person to abuse, causing them to dissociate from themselves while they're being abused, to create multiple personalities in them. And I don't know how much of that is true. We know MK Ultra happened. We know that they tried to burn all the documents, and it's only like the 10% that they forgot to burn are the ones that we actually know about. And those are heavily redacted. You know, they were forcing drugs on mental patients. They were doing some seriously messed up stuff with that. And the concept of inducing multiple personalities through abuse, that actually is one of the major theories of what causes schizophrenia, is childhood abuse. So is this, anyway, they have paintings that mimic this process in Comet Ping Pong. So are there any connections to that? I don't know. You know, like look at Morris of the Doors, you know, Morrison. And I love the Doors. Okay, yeah, they're terrible and degenerate, but they're also very poetic and brilliant. His father was a general involved in the Gulf of Tonkin, and his mother was an admiral. You know, there's look at the guy that tried to assassinate Reagan.
Yeah,
you know, his parents were involved in politics. They were connected to these experiments. And I know I'm just kind of going off an angle here, on a tangent, but I'm not saying I have a perfect explanation of why there's all of these bits of data that just ping your radar. But there is a bit of a pattern here. I don't know who's guilty. I don't know what all the connections are, but let's hope to God that somebody actually investigates this, because it's becoming big enough that hopefully the FBI will have to.
Well, I mean, we've had similar scandals in Britain, and I think the stumbling block generally is that the people who would investigate it, in this case the FBI, tend to actually be linked with the people they would be investigating, linked in whatever ways, whether it's professional or personal. So you end up with an establishment that won't willingly choose to investigate itself.
Well, from what I've seen coming out, I am reasonably optimistic that the FBI, they're the good guys, that they're actually on the side of good. It's the CIA that I worry about.
But yes, that as well. It is murky, to say the least. But what does interest me in the context of what we've been saying earlier, what does interest me about this the most is that the media simply, not only do they try to, not only do they not give it a fair hearing, they try to bury it. And not only that, but they've even invented an entire concept of fake news in order to do so, which not only affects Pizzagate, but it affects, well, it's an attack on alternative media. And it's a general thing.
You know what? Look a bit more into this, because I haven't really had time to be up to date on anything. But from what I've read, they just passed a law equating fake news with being a traitor in America. So they're really coming after it. But at the same time, each time the media talks about fake news, they give us more exposure. That's the beauty of it. The media needs to report on things. Okay, like reporters are desperate to find something every single day to put into their newspapers. They need it. They're desperate for it. And so if you are worth writing about, they will write about you. They have no choice. Now, they might write about you in a very negative way, calling it fake news and saying there is no Pizzagate. But when you say it's you know, hey, don't think about a pink elephant right now. When they say there is no Pizzagate, people start wondering what Pizzagate is, and they start looking into it for themselves. And, you know, at the end of the day, we've got Trump in. You know, I've seen a lot of detractors. I've seen a lot of people that are very cynical, saying that Trump is just another stooge, another part of the system, and maybe they're right. And I do have some concerns. However, give him till April. I think by April, we'll know what's going on with Donald Trump.
Well, yeah, I agree. It is far too early at this stage. What do you think? Do you want to talk about the whole Trump thing, that what's happened this year? And what do you think did happen this year?
You know, I've said this before, that during the fall of Rome, there were all these people, they each had a little piece of the puzzle, but they had no ability to communicate with one another. They had no ability to network. You know, let me give you one example, a personal example. Now, I haven't exactly built up the best resume in my life. And so I've had a few gigs with corporations that in theory should have turned out well, but I wind up getting laid off or whatever. And I'm left thinking, well, maybe I'm just an asshole. But then I start talking with my friend Aaron Clary, who has made far better financial decisions in life than I have. And he is telling me the exact same stories about working for banks, about coming up with a brilliant plan that would make the bank money, and nobody would listen to him. And so that's one piece of the puzzle, that, you know what, guys, if you can't make a career, that's not your fault. There are no careers for the company. There is no 50-year service, here's a gold watch. That doesn't exist anymore, even though they pretend it does during the interview process. That's one piece of the puzzle. Then there's the whole, again, manosphere, dating. Is it just me? Am I just not popular? No. The whole dating market is really messed up. So on and so forth. We are networking on all of this. During the fall of Rome, we would have been isolated. We each would have had one little piece, but we wouldn't have been able to put it all together. This time, we are putting it all together. And listen, even with the normies, this stuff is seeping out to the masses. They're going to be a few years behind us, but it's still seeping out there. And this is what sets the stage for somebody like Donald Trump to even be possible. Without us doing all this, without this growing awareness of what's going on, Trump wouldn't have had anything to run on whatsoever. Yeah, like he probably could have won as the president, but he just would have been another president in the gradual decline of the American Empire and Western civilization in general.
Well, do you think he will actually arrest that decline?
See, that's the thing, is like we were talking earlier in the conversation, there's going to be a great culling. I mean, like, what percentage of 70% of people, I don't know, it's more than 50%, are useless. They are completely addicted to their opiates, to their SSRIs, to whatever. Those people aren't going to get better. They don't want to get better. And not even Trump can stop that. But there's a way, you know, like, listen, I believe in the generational cycle of history. I think there's a 400-year dark age coming, whether we like it or not. But, you know, dark age doesn't necessarily mean dark. The dark age is the winter of civilization. Okay, it's part of the cycle. It's coming, but it could come in a good way or a bad way. And I think what Trump offers, what could potentially happen, is that we could turn it into a good winter. Not 400 years of Muslims, you know, raping and pillaging our women and destroying our cities and burning libraries, like happened, like the last dark age that happened. I think this might actually be a dark age where we back off from the technological advancement because we need to. Okay, we do not have the wisdom to use the technology that we're using right now. We have enough of it. We don't need any more.
Yeah, I can see what you're
saying. We're not accustomed to what we currently have.
Yeah, that is fascinating. I'll have a look and see if there are any questions for you, because how long do you want to go? Because I know that if you're on the phone, it's going to have a battery life.
Oh, I've got an inverter in my car.
All right, okay.
Actually, let me just check. I do check how much. That okay button. Okay. Oh, yeah, I've still got plenty of power.
Okay, great. Well, I hope you're right about Trump. I know that this sort of relates when you're talking about the long term. It reminded me of a question I wanted to ask you. Well, someone actually posted this for you anyway, but I wanted to ask you about this because you did an interesting video about a month or 2 months ago about this. Hold on a second. I'll just find it. Right, yeah. Okay. Hold on. Do you think the Keck phenomenon is a good real-time example of how a religious cult comes into being?
Oh, geez, that's
Well, you did that video a few months ago about Keck. I think it was it called The Power of Keck? I can't remember.
Yeah, I forgot the exact title, but it's one of my most popular videos. And you know what? Yes. And let me put it this way. Keck is everything good about paganism, and it's also everything bad about paganism. Because Keck has, you know, like whether or not you want to believe there's a spiritual dimension to anything, okay, like 99% of the time, you can ignore the spiritual dimension and we'll still be in complete agreement with all of this. So we'll just leave the whole supernatural aspect out of it. Keck has become a very strong organizing principle. Okay, the meme magic, that's half said as a joke, but you know, rhetoric is a real thing. Okay, it's, again, don't think of a pink elephant. That's a really simple example of it. But rhetoric changes how you perceive reality. And the Keck phenomenon has changed how people perceive reality. It's come from a largely post-Christian, atheistic people who have discovered who have been fed this nothing but corn syrup and bran for spirituality. Okay, what's spirituality? Spirituality is liking something on Facebook. It's diversity now. It's don't judge. Love is love, etc. So Keck was the first taste of real spirituality.
And what is
but
that?
At the same time,
when you say real spirituality,
again?
When you say real spirituality, what is that in the context of Keck?
I would say it provided a lot of meaning, a lot of organization. The fact that you can, when two people, they share a Pepe Le Frog meme, it's like instantly you know everything that they stand for. And if they have a disagreement, if they have an argument or a debate, it's going to be a friendly one, as opposed to vicious and vitriolic or whatever. They're immediately on the same team. They have the same worldview, the same reality. There's purposefulness in Keck. But at the same time, the problem with paganism is that it's very self-serving. And yeah, like, the saying, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch. Anybody that's giving you a free lunch, they want something from you. And Keck, the meme magic, the free lunch being offered there, Keck wants something from that. Okay? And again, completely ignore the metaphysical, completely ignore the supernatural components. The Keck is the god of laughter, of darkness, of chaos, and that's what Keck wants. And so although it provides this unifying spiritual element for people that engage in it, it also drives them towards becoming undisciplined chaos. Like Ramsey Paul has said that we're the new hippies. And I was mentioning Jim Morrison earlier. I just watched the biography movie on him, on The Doors. It's a great movie, by the way, folks. Should all watch it. And Jim Morrison was so right about everything and so absolutely wrong about everything, too. And if when you look at the establishment personified by the cops in that movie that he's going up against, they were so wrong about everything, and yet they're right that we need order. You can't have these massive orgies that he's inspiring in his concerts. We can't just have chaos. We need an organic whole. And Keck is just that chaotic darkness. It's just one of the nodes. It's a god. It's not the god. Does that make sense, or am I just do I sound like a crazy person right now?
No, you don't sound crazy at all. It's just a very interesting concept, which I don't know how I can integrate it, but it fascinated me, that video you did about it, because as you say, even if you don't believe in the metaphysical or spiritual dimension of this, it does have psychological implications which start to feed back in themselves, thus making the thing as good as real. People behave in, once people start behaving as if something is real, it might as well be, because the social conditions begin to change in accordance with it being real. And
exactly. Metaphysical entities don't, the game Diablo? my buddy was playing Diablo 2. And so Diablo, it's this game where it's randomly generated mass. It's basically card collecting. Right, where you collect suits of armor and you level up to like 2 billion. But he's at the last boss and he says he's like killing one of the three primevals. And I look at him and say, so what's the metaphysical effects of that on the world? And he looks at me and says, it's a game, motherfucker. Metaphysical entities don't. Demons are not big red guys that you punch in the face. Okay, like, hey, I love Doom. Okay, I haven't played the new Doom. I really want to. I hear it's great. That's not what demons are, okay? 99% of what they are is purely conceptual, okay? They're things of the spirit. They are concepts. And, what you pay attention to becomes the reality that you live in.
Yes, yes.
And that's not merely that's... It kind of gets dumbed down as to, think and grow rich. Well, yes, you actually do need to be seeing opportunities as opposed to seeing problems. You need to be attuned to the real world but you also need to, you need to decide how you are going to see the real world.
Yeah, you need to filter it in a way that is productive, and well, you choose what productive means, and thus you choose the filtering.
Exactly.
Hold on, I'll see if there are any more questions. There were some others earlier on. I'll just go for this. Hold on.
I'm afraid I can't see them just because I'm on the phone right now.
No, that's okay. I'll read them for you. Oh, right. Okay, this is a. Okay, I'll start with that. There are two here. I'll start with the easy one. This is from Paul Gask. In the light of recent Islamic terrorist attacks in Europe and increasing ethnic minority gang crime in our major cities, do you think that the native British, although I think this applies to all Europeans, should have the licensed right to carry firearms for self-protection? Or do you think this would make so-called multicultural Britain an even more dangerous place for the indigenous natives? I mean, do you think Britain is in a different situation from the USA in terms of the need for gun ownership? Is there something intrinsically different or distinctive about Britain that makes gun ownership more problematical?
Well, you know, I'm going to start off by saying that, like, politically, you asked me if I was alt-right. I prefer to think of myself as a Catholic medievalist, because nobody knows what that means, and so I don't have to have an opinion. I just hate everything that's modern, including the idea of human rights. Rights are things granted by the crown that come with responsibilities, okay? Now, the right to bear arms is... I think that most people should have that right by virtue of them being a citizen, being a subject, a law-abiding subject of their rightful monarch. Okay? Now, that said, I don't have the religious, like quasi-religious obsession with the American Constitution that other people do. You know, that, for instance, libertarians might have. But that said, That out of the way, I think that, yeah, the right to self-defense, the right to defend yourself against criminals, is a very foundational right. And the statistics, you guys can look this up on your own, but the statistics have shown time and time again that when you ban guns, crime goes up. When you legalize guns, crime goes down. And Britain is actually one of the major data points there. Because there was, what was it, 5 or 10 years ago that they really started cracking down on gun ownership? Am I thinking
yes,
right?
Yes, it was actually about, I think it was 15, it was 20 years ago, because it started with the Dunblane massacre in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm. There was something 5 or 10 years ago, some new law they put in, think it was.
I think there was a taxi, if I recall correctly, there was a taxi driver who went berserk with some guns, and that led to even more tightening of the laws, and that was about 5 years ago.
Yeah, and immediately after that, stabbings went up, murders went up, home invasions went up. Criminals have guns anyway. Okay, if you want to get a gun, I mean, well, yeah, mind you, I don't know how to buy drugs, okay? Maybe I could. I'd have trouble figuring out how to buy drugs, but you know what I'm saying. If you want a gun, you can go find one, or at least you can go find a sword. You can go find a knife, and if somebody's a law-abiding person, they're not going to have a gun. Gun ownership just empowers the law-abiding people. It does not help the criminals. And yeah, I think absolutely. People need firearms. Without,
right.
Without a doubt whatsoever.
Okay. Okay. I do agree with, I simply agree. Okay. Here's another question. This is a bit more, I don't know how you'll feel about this. I saw your recent video message to Christopher Cantwell. Did he respond? And do you keep in contact with him?
Not to my knowledge, and unfortunately, I haven't been able to keep track of much of, like, anybody that follows me, I haven't been posting many videos recently just because big explosion happened in my personal life, and so this is why I'm sitting in a parking lot right now on the cell phone. So since doing that video, I haven't been able to keep up on what's been going on with him. And I know he has posted a couple of things recently. And I really hope he's doing better, because I really like Christopher Cantwell. I don't care. You know, like, everybody's a critic. You know, like, Millennial Woes, I've heard some gossip about you in the past that I'm not even going to bother to dignify by repeating it. You know, it's... And same thing with Cantwell. I'm sure there's people gossiping about him, and they're loving it and enjoying it, that somebody they used to listen to is going through a dark stage. You know what? We're all human beings. And the difference between us and the SJWs is that we're supposed to stand for virtue. We're supposed to be working together, helping one another out. And it really ticks me. Like, listen, was Cantwell a dick when he banned you from the chat? Then he was a dick. Okay, fine. But he's still one of us. So I really hope he's doing well. I have no news on it whatsoever.
Right, okay. All right. I'll see if there are other questions. Oh yeah, do you look positively upon the alt-right fan fiction and mystique surrounding Pepe? And then he goes on, essentially, is meme magic real? That kind of relates to the previous.
It does have good aspects to it. It's, I guess, this is old man Arini talking here, okay? So I'm not quite as full of piss and vinegar as a guy in his 20s. Just don't get carried away with it. I'll give you a practical example. Andrew Anglin, I really like that guy, even though he's constantly cosplaying as a Nazi. Because he cosplays as a Nazi. It is so obviously cosplay. At least I think it is. It seems obvious to me that it's an exaggeration. It's he cranks it up to 11, and he knows it's ridiculous. Okay, same thing with the Pepe, with the trolling and whatnot. It's great, it's effective, but don't let that become your identity, because soon you won't even know what you're trolling about anymore. You're just trolling for the sake of trolling, and then you become the object. You are no longer a person. You no longer have the ability to apply valuation to things. You just become a mechanism. So I think there's a lot of good stuff with it. Just don't get too caught up in it. You know, what starts off as irony eventually becomes sincerity. So don't make your entire life about irony, or you are just another Jon Stewart and you're just as toxic as he is.
Right. Okay. Here's a good one. What are your thoughts on Pope Francis?
Well, Miss Barnhart, Anne Barnhart, has a very convincing argument that he's not the Pope. He's a pretender. The real Pope is still Benedict, who is being basically locked up. He's still in Vatican City, and there may still be a homosexual mafia controlling that. And, you know, I heard this critique of Benedict at one point, that he's really more of a theologian than a fighter, than a leader. He's a good man, but he's not an aggressive man. Pope Francis, listen, his book, The Joy of Sodomy, Laetitia Amoris, I think it's called, is the Latin for it. The Joy of Sodomy, there's a couple of passages that could be interpreted as heresy. And actually, Council of Bishops has publicly confronted him to clarify those statements. Everything else he said, everything you've seen in the mainstream news, like, for instance, when he said that somebody that builds a wall doesn't have the love of Jesus in their heart.
Yeah.
If you actually read the original quote, he was saying people that build walls in their heart do not have love. So he's not technically speaking about,
yeah, you
know, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
That's the thing. He has not actually said anything that's heretical. But he says things that can easily be misinterpreted as heretical.
Right.
So either he's a complete buffoon, and he's a good guy, or he is very, very, very clever, and in his heart he's a heretic, but he's never actually said any heresy.
Is yeah, doing it in a roundabout way.
There's no nice way to put it about him. He is absolutely terrible. He's either an idiot or he's evil.
Right. Okay.
He's the real pope. I think that Benedict never gave up the papal vestments. He is still wearing them, and so right now we have two popes, which you can't have, which goes against Vatican law. Look up Anne Barnhart. That's Barn, HRDTZ. No, just T. If you want to know more, look up her arguments. She is far more educated on this than I am. But yeah, Pope Francis is an absolute embarrassment, and this is why I don't get on Protestants and tell them that they need to come to the one true church, because quite frankly, the one true church is a freaking embarrassment right now.
Right. Okay. Here's a good question. If genetic modification was a standard reproduction method, would race become irrelevant since all modified humans would be raceless? And if this is a possibility, does conservation of the white race really matter?
Here's the thing. If we engaged in something like that, we would just use it to produce slaves.
Right, okay.
You can't, like, the same thing that causes men to be more aggressive and more prone to breaking the law, it's the same thing that makes them geniuses. Okay? People are not merely a set of impulses and a set of traits. And that's what we're trying to do by boil it down, all down to genetic science. We are far more complex than that. And the thing is that even hypothetically, if we could engineer the super race, it would still need a culture. It would still need a race, an ethnicity, a tribe. All we'd be doing would be creating, like, basically the Khan from Star Trek. We'd be creating a new race of humans that would hate the other ones. Race is actually in my opinion, it's a crucial part of a person's identity. And you really see this with kids that are born into interracial relationships, that they never feel at home in either race. And you know, furthermore, I just say, look at the absolute mess we've made of genetic modification with produce, you know, with farming. Look at the mess we've made of that. Something that should be one of the greatest sciences ever developed that can feed millions, and we're poisoning people and giving them cancer with it.
Yeah.
So okay. That's the other thing. I do not trust people with this ability. What we should really be focusing on is getting rid of all the dysgenics in our civilization that encourage broken people to have broken children.
Okay. If you have any other questions, post them in, as I said, in the 2016 Millennial Hangouts video. Right, I think that's them all. Okay. Well, I don't have any other questions for you.
I think it was a good podcast.
Yeah, I think so. I'm starting to get tired, so I can't keep up.
You are something?
It's 2:30 in the morning, yeah.
Oh my goodness, and you know what? I still got to drive a whole bunch more kilometers. So I think we should wish everybody a happy Christmas, and I should hit the road again.
Yeah, it is actually Christmas Day here now, so Merry Christmas to everyone in Britain and Europe. Well, I have enjoyed this, Arena. I'm sorry that I'm slowing down now and I'm not really responding to what you're saying. It's just that I'm suddenly getting tired.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on. I was really worried I wasn't, just because of the traveling and whatnot, but it worked out. So there's a Christmas miracle for y'all. It's not quite a miracle on 34th Street, but, you know, it's close.
Yeah, well, thank you for persevering. It's nice to have you on the channel at last, because as I said at the start, it's been, 3 years since, I remember it was April. Yeah, it was April 2013 when I first discovered your channel. So that's, 3.5 years that I've known of you. And So yeah, it's good to have you on finally, and I'm sure we'll do more in future.
So, absolutely.
Okay, so thank you to Davis MJ Arini, and thank you to everyone at home for listening. Let me just. Oh, yeah, okay. So the next 2 days there won't be any hangouts, and then we'll be back on Tuesday at 10 p.m. with Morgoth. So I will see you then. Thank you.